Fetty and Fetamint will help put monetary power back into the hands of everyone, everywhere, said Fetty Incorporated co-founder and CEO Obi Nwosu in a statement. This creates brighter futures for billions, and especially for those struggling under oppressive regimes, which ultimately makes the world a better place. The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to the show. This is Bitcoin Audible, and I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. We have got a great read today. I've been reading a bunch about this. I've watched like four or five videos. I listened to a Marty Bent episode with OB, Justin Moon, and someone else who was joining them from off screen. This is all about Fetty. Fetty and Fetamint. Fetamint is the protocol. Fetty is the company. So they've just raised a good chunk of change, and they actually have a pretty aggressive timeline for having a wallet for this. But this is a really interesting model. This is bringing Chalmie and eCash, the idea of blind signatures and David Chalmie's eCash model, to Bitcoin, building it on top of Bitcoin. And ultimately, what is really fascinating about this idea is that it is attempting to fix the custody model. Rather than going from the direction of how do we get everybody to, you know, absolutely hold their own keys and run their own node and, you know, all this stuff, which I talk about in the Guy's Take, which, you know, ultimately, if we hold that to everyone's standard, we end up in a situation where 90% of people are just on custodians. And that is the problem we have today. The question is, how do we fix the custodian? How do we make it so the custodian isn't centralized? How do we make it so that we have privacy from the custodian? How can we create a setup that allows us to be a bank, to run our own infrastructure and to have our own payment network and to integrate with Lightning and Bitcoin? And that is why I think this has really interesting promise, because that's the framing by which this truly is an innovation. And I'm very, very interested. I want to see what this does. So with that, let's go ahead and thank our sponsors, and we will jump into today's article from Bitcoin Magazine. So a quick thank you to our amazing sponsors. We have Swan Bitcoin, the onboarding experience to Bitcoin. All the knowledge that you could possibly get, the best team, the simplest way to set up a Bitcoin savings plan, swanbitcoin.com/guy. And then if you're stuck having to use fiat, I still have to use fiat. I do it with Fold. I do it with a debit card that gets me sats back on everything. I get sats every single time I spend Bitcoin, and I'll tell you, every single time I spend dollars, and I'll tell you, it makes me feel really good. And then lastly, CoinKite and the Cold Card hardware wallet. These guys are the Bitcoin-only hardware company. They have been around for a long time, and they have an awesome device and actually tons of great stuff on the store. Get yourself a Block Clock Mini. I haven't done it yet, but I got the discount code soon, so stay tuned. Links to all these in the show notes. Check them out. With that, let's get into today's read. And it's titled, Scaling Bitcoin Custody with Fetamint. Written by Namcios. Fetty raised $4 million to accelerate the development of the Fetamint protocol and its companion app, Fetty. Tools that can improve and scale Bitcoin custody. Fetty Incorporated on Tuesday announced that it had raised $4.2 million in a seed round as the company seeks to onboard more users into Bitcoin with the Fetty app, per a statement sent to Bitcoin Magazine. The application, which the company expects to begin rolling out in Q1 2023, will provide a user interface for Fetamint, an open-source protocol that leverages federated Chalmian eCash mints to decentralize Bitcoin custody and enhance the scaling capabilities of the currency. Quote, Fedi and Fedimint will help put monetary power back into the hands of everyone everywhere, said Fedi Incorporated co-founder and CEO Obi Nwosu in a statement. This creates brighter futures for billions, and especially for those struggling under oppressive regimes, which ultimately makes the world a better place. How Fedimint works. Fedimint is based on the concept of second-party custody, which improves upon third-party custody solutions and even some self-custody, first-party custody setups. Second-party custody involves trusting family members or friends with the custody of one's Bitcoin in a way that improves the trust and security models inherent in the classic centralized third-party custody solutions, which are often composed of strangers whose incentives don't necessarily align with those of the user. It isn't uncommon for third-party custodians to fall short in properly securing the Bitcoin of a given set of users. Not only is this a risk because that third party represents a single point of failure, but the success of this setup is greatly dependent on the incentives that the custodian has in securing the user's funds. For a stranger, the incentives more closely align with the necessity to either make profits from the custody service, blatantly steal, or rehypothecate the funds than to methodically ensure best practices for the safety of those Bitcoin. Second-party custody seeks to improve upon this model by having users rely on parties they already trust in real life, for example, close friends or family members, to secure their funds instead of completely outsourcing this task to an institutional stranger. With Fedimint, users can create a community whose technical leaders will be those tech-savvy and trusted enough to ensure a proper functioning of the system. Though the concept of trust is alien to most Bitcoin proponents, the reality is some might incorporate an aspect of trust in their self-custody setup today without realizing it. When users self-custody Bitcoin, they have to make decisions relating to the backup of those funds. Whereas they can remain in possession of their hardware wallets or signing devices at all times, the 12 or 24 words arguably need to be stored away so as to mitigate the risk of loss or theft. In doing so, users need to opt between storing them in a safe at home, in a friend's safe, or in a bank. The latter is susceptible to seizure by the government, as banks need to abide by eventual subpoenas, whereas the former is susceptible to $5 wrench attacks. Leaving the backup words with a friend can be smart if the friend is highly trustworthy, mitigates against seizure, and not as publicly known to mitigate against indirect $5 wrench attacks. However, it is still a single point of failure. Ideally, therefore, the backup codes for a self-custody setup would be split using a cryptographically secure model, such as Shamir's secret sharing, and each part given a trusted second party. The issue with this, besides the technical complexity of devising such a scheme, is again, trust. The user needs to trust not only each second party, but collectively that they don't collude against the user and steal their Bitcoin. Therefore, even the most sophisticated of the self-custody setups might include some level of trust. Fedimint brings that trust assumption, second-party trust, into a model that is less technically complex than self-custody and more scalable and private. Here's how it works. Chaumian eCash. As mentioned above, Fedimint is based on Federated Chaumian eCash. Chaumian eCash is the digital cash invented by Dr. David Chaum, an early cryptographer who in the 1980s sought to mitigate against the privacy issues inherent in the digitization of money. A trend the researcher foresaw as digital means of communication began to emerge in his time. Chaum was concerned with the impending privacy risks of a digitized money, where banks would be able to trace people's spending, and physical cash's peer-to-peer nature would be lost. The issuance and redemption of Chaum's digital cash was still centralized, though its transacting was peer-to-peer. The researcher didn't attempt to break free from government money per se, rather he sought a means to conduct in-person cash trades online. Chaum's money leveraged cryptography to allow a user to deposit money into a bank and receive an IOU banknote that could be traded further among other people. That banknote promised its holder X amount of money to be redeemed by the bank at any given time, a concept popularized by the banknotes of the time of the gold standard. Given the not-so-great divisibility and transportability of gold, gold IOU banknotes allowed for an easier transfer and carrying of, quote, gold. Likewise, a holder of Chalmian e-cash would be able to redeem it for money at the bank that issued it. Chalm's model, of course, relied on the reputation of the bank. Customers transacting with that bank's IOU note would need to trust the bank's ability to honor the contract stipulated by that note. Otherwise, customers would see no value in them and hence would forego transacting in those notes completely. On the privacy side of things, Chalm's eCash leveraged blind signatures, a cryptographic trick that prevents the bank from knowing who owned the banknote. Without it, it would be trivial to link a user's identity with a given note. The example given by Chalm himself to illustrate this concept relied on carbon copy paper envelopes. The user can obtain a blind signature, a signature on something which the signer doesn't know the content of, by putting the data they want signed inside the envelope made of carbon copy paper and sealing it. The signer could sign the envelope itself, and due to the carbon copy paper, the signature would, quote, leak to the data and sign it as well. With Chalm's blind signature protocol, the depositor would send a blinded piece of data to the bank. After receiving the data blindly signed, the depositor would be able to unblind it, which would allow them to transfer it by giving it to another person. After a given amount of trades, that note could at any time be redeemed back at the bank for its corresponding amount of money. At the time of redemption, the bank would be able to check whether it had previously signed that piece of data and whether it had been already redeemed or not, checking for validity and shielding against a double spend. Federated. A federation improves upon the centralization of Chalmian eCash. It is what allows the decentralization of custody, and hence also improves upon the more popular third-party custody solutions in the Bitcoin ecosystem. A federation is a technical setup formed among multiple parties with a multi-signature Bitcoin address. A multi-signature, multi-sig for short, enables funds to be locked up in a Bitcoin address that requires a minimum amount of those parties to agree before moving any funds. In practice, this works by requiring multiple signatures, hence the name, so the funds can be unlocked and moved. Common multi-sig setups include 2 of 3 and 3 of 5. In the former, 3 signatures comprise the setup in total and 2 are needed to move the Bitcoin, whereas in the latter, 3 signatures out of the total of 5 are needed before the BTC can be spent. The multi-signature ensures that one custodian doesn't go rogue and spends the Bitcoin it is custodying on behalf of the user. The user still needs to trust the custodians collectively, but the resilience of the system is increased as multiple people the user supposedly trusts in real life would need to collude against the user to steal their funds. This is why the usage of known and trusted parties to make up the federation is a must. Moreover, the multi-sig also ensures that the IOUs issued by the federation are also a multi-sig, requiring the same quorum for the movement of funds, and meaning that one guardian can't create IOUs by themselves. The answer to scaling private Bitcoin custody. Putting it all together, Fedimint leverages a decentralized trust system to enable Bitcoin users to form communities with friends and family, within which money transactions are cheap, quick, and anonymous, and custody is simplified and strengthened. Users can join a Fedimint community by depositing Bitcoin to the Federation and receiving the corresponding amount of IOU tokens, which can be transferred anonymously to members of that community. The receiving party then exchanges the received tokens for new ones. A process that is similar to Chalm's blind signature scheme enables the Federation to check that the sender did not double spend those tokens. After a successful exchange for new tokens, the receiver marks the transaction as complete. The Lightning Network, Bitcoin's second layer protocol for fast and cheap payments, can enter the Fedimint mix to further strengthen the setup. More specifically, Lightning allows users in a Federation to be interoperable with the entire Bitcoin ecosystem. In a nutshell, Fedimint wallets have the potential to bring strong privacy to Bitcoin users with better security than third-party custody setups and more ease of use than fully-fledged self-custody solutions. it might be the tool that answers the challenge of scaling self-custody while encouraging more people to forego outsourcing the custody of their Bitcoin to a centralized custodian who is effectively a single point of failure. One of the many possible solutions for a feasible hyper-Bitcoinized world. All right, that wraps up our piece on Fedimint. Let's take a break really quick and hit our sponsor, and then we will jump back in. Fold card sets back on freaking everything. Guys, I know you've heard this probably 100 times, but if you are doing fiat with a normal, boring-ass bank account and getting credit card points, whatever the hell that is, or airline miles, or actually, nobody gets rewards on debit cards. So with your debit card on, hey buddy, debit card on your bank, you're not getting anything back for that. It's a debit card, but you can with Fold. I do all of my normal purchases. I went out today to get some coffee. I got 2% back. I got 2% back on coffee in sats. And with the price the way it is, I have been stacking like mad. So just literally feels like just like a week or two ago, I was at 9 million. I'm on my way to 10 million sats already. And if you have the Fold card, you can even get your own personal node from like Start 9 or Crypto Cloaks. You get your, deck your node out with a 3D printed case, and they have like 7% back in sats. You can get 5% back on Amazon if you have the premium card. Guys, for everything that you still have to do in your fiat life with shitty fiat, get sats back with it. And you get 20% off with code BitcoinAudible. 20% off the price of the premium card. You get it. You get daily sat spins. You get the little metaverse game thing, which is just a fun way to give you free sats and free spins. And you'll go through your day with that warm, fuzzy feeling knowing that even having to spend fiat and not being able to buy Bitcoin with it, when you have to spend fiat on your life and you have to like consume stuff for no good reason just because you have to eat and stay alive, yeah, I know it sucks, but you're getting sats. You're getting sats for every bit of it. Go to guyswan.com/fold and use code BitcoinAudible, all one word, for 20% off. Let's get back into the show. All right, so Fedimint. This is a really, really interesting technology. There's something, you know, eCash and blind signatures were kind of the, they were such a major part of the entire cypherpunk ethos, of the entire cypherpunk movement, because they were kind of the key before it was realized that the centralized nature of the protocol or of the money itself was going to be critical to actually achieving any degree of privacy, to achieving any of the secondary goals. Well, excuse me, really the cypherpunk's primary goal was privacy and autonomy, but that you can't do that being a derivative of a centralized system. If somebody else controls the money, if somebody else ultimately controls the server that you have to redeem from, or the gold, the actual gold ounces that you have to redeem your paper for, then it doesn't matter what properties your paper has. And I think that was kind of the fundamental realization, because Chalm's model, David Chalm's blind signatures and the eCash model, was actually brilliant. The problem was is that you had to have banks implement it, but it was a way to exchange bank deposits between people without using the bank as the payment processor. So that is the interesting takeaway, is that the bank is able to sign off on a transaction without knowing anything about the transaction. So that rather than requiring them to vet everything, the quote-unquote, the eCash itself is its own vetting, and they simply sign to recognize its transfer without knowing who or from who or to who the transfer is occurring, so that the redemption is private. The movement of the funds are private. I mean, it is literally eCash. That is the best way to think of it. It's the same thing that cash is. Cash, you eventually go back to a bank. Like, think about it in the context of like gold-backed dollars. You can transfer the cash. You can do it privately. It is yours. It's a quote unquote bearer instrument. And then you go to the bank or you go to the institution to redeem that cash for the underlying monetary good. And that was the e-cash idea. And it was brilliant. It was great, but it required adoption. It required the centralized systems, the actual infrastructure of the banking system to be okay with it. And that's what ended up not happening. Granted, there's a lot of, if you actually dig into the history, Chaum was not a businessman. And, you know, there were a lot of just bad decisions made. And so, like, I think it was destined to fail one way or the other as the way the model was. Like, I think, like I said just a minute ago, is that the ultimate problem was that you had to remove the centralized nature of what you were redeeming. But nonetheless, I think just as a business model, it probably just wasn't going to work, even if it hadn't been that DigiCash, the company, I think DigiCash was the name of the company, it seems like it was poorly run if you dig into the history of it. But nonetheless, back to Fedimint. So this is, and this whole thing is very much aligned with an idea I've talked about a lot, is hyper-localization. And this is very common in Bitcoin. You know, Marty Bent had a great episode with, they did this on TFTC. I can't remember the guy who wrote the book about, like, the hyper-localization of America and kind of, like, laid out this potential future path to more localized communities. But this is, like, such a great example. And that's also why, let's go back to the original complaints about Fedimint, because I think the framing of what we are comparing this to is the important way to think about this. Is, you know, a lot of the complaints, and 100% valid, the fact that it is an IOU, it's 100% an IOU. So the Federation, I mean, it's trust minimized, not really the word, it's trust lowered. it's a trust lowered relationship, but really it is a find someone you can trust relationship. It's putting you in the driver's seat as far as who you trust and your relationship with them and allowing it to localize. It's so hard with the models that we have today in the business world and in the payment processors and finance. You can't do that. I can't, like, go to my brother or my best friend and get together and make a bank. And then, you know, the hilarity of that is just absurd. But the idea that we could actually do this with Bitcoin, having an open source protocol that we can build on top of, and all we have to do is run a computer. All we have to do is run a setup that actually just stays online. It's basically just running a home server, and I can still do my job. My brother, my friend, like, our community and our family can still continue to do what it is that we do and run this system. The system has been automated for us. That truly changes the relationship between you and the quote-unquote payment processor, the Fedimint, the Federation. But understand, we should not be comparing this to, Obi Nwosu, he talks about this in the Bitcoin 2022 talk that he gave on the open source stage, and this was really good, is that this is a form of custody. This is an alternative to the current forms of custody. So when people are talking about this, it's like, oh, it's an IOU, oh, it's, you know, not your keys, not your coins situation. Like, that is perfectly understandable, but you're comparing it to, is everybody holding their own keys? Does everybody have a cold card and a Bitbox and their own little private multi-sig? Does everybody run their own Lightning node and have their own position and run their own full Bitcoin node so that they're verifying and confirming all these transactions themselves? It's not a comparison to that. Those people are running that. In fact, those people are the ones that will likely be running the Fedimint, because they're the ones that everybody else in their community is having to lean on. I'm a perfect example of this. I love the idea of the Uncle Jim model, because what's brilliant about Bitcoin is that we can localize in a small, trusted group We can build strong, trusted relationships and provide monetary and financial services to each other. We're going back to the days of like the late 1800s with fraternities and local trusts and these sorts of things. I think this is the future. And the reason I think it's the future, and Obi talks about this too, because when he goes to reaching people, like everybody talks about like the global South, we're talking about like Africa, and it, basically the developing world is really kind of the focus here. They already have these strong, trusted local communities. They have to. They have to because they don't have the infrastructure. This will not be a great, well, it probably could be a great tool, but I don't think this will, this trust model will make the most sense for people in the U.S. We are far more, and most of the modern world, honestly, we're far more accustomed to just handing off our trust to some giant corporation, giving them all of our information, and we don't know shit about our neighbors. We don't know anything about the people in our neighborhood, in our local community. That sense of community has really fallen apart, but I think it's coming back. I think it's going to be a really critical part of the future for a number of different reasons. And one, just a very simple one that I think I want to touch on and let you think about is the fact that go to the DALL-E 2, go to Midjourney, these artificial intelligences that can just make an image from a description. These things are able to recreate your likeness in a completely unique situation that you can just dream up. They take and learn from all of the images of the internet, all the images of you, and they are able to create a fake situation, take a likeness of you and recreate completely made up, completely invented people, completely invented situations, completely invented details, and even quote unquote, imagine things. Now, when a artificial intelligence, just artificially intelligent algorithm that just, you know, contextualizes an image, when you can tell it to draw a picture of a plane, you know, flying through the air with frogs stuck to it, and it can do that, that is also an algorithm that will easily turn around and identify a plane when running a CAPTCHA to sign up for a website. It will get to a point, and I think this will happen very, very quickly, where our fail-safes to make sure that we're dealing with humans online won't work anymore. That there will just be too many things that a specialized computer can do to fake being human. And that the and our personal information will be unsafe as well. It will not be, oh, give me your home address. Nope, that stuff is already screwed. I think on a long enough timeline, even that stuff falls apart. And you're also looking at a time where an artificially intelligent, an algorithm is, when we can already put makeup on our face and like an Instagram filter, that we can have stars or birds flying around above our head, or we can take a picture and see what we look like when we're, you know, 50 years older. It's not going to be long before another person can have a conversation as you over Zoom to someone else with your voice and your face. The solution to that is localization, is in the real world. Now, there will still be times where we actually interact with computers, we interact with big corporations, but I think we will treat them. It will be in situations where we do not need to trust, and a trustless money will be exactly how we interact with those things, where it doesn't even matter if it's a bot. It doesn't even matter if it's just a protocol fulfilling our order on, the Amazon network that isn't even run by people anymore. But when we're kind of in that surreal relationship with institutions that produce, or protocols that produce or connect producers and consumers, the areas that do need trust will be hyper-localized. The ability to actually verify will have to happen, verify who we are as a person when our money simply isn't good enough, when there is some sort of trusted relationship, we'll have to go back to local. We'll have to go back to a place where you can go meet your friend in person, because that is the one thing that can't be faked. And that's also why I think Africa, why I think a lot of the global south, why a lot of the developing world might actually end up ahead of the modern world, because they don't have to rebuild those relationships. They are already having to depend on them because their institutions fail them constantly. Their governments are unbelievably corrupt. They don't have this, oh, I'm just going to blindly accept that this institution is telling me the truth. They have to rely on their local communities. They're already doing it with cell phones and their local networks. This sort of model, a federated custody model for these groups, for these communities, this is where it is going to serve the greatest good. Fediment is something that you compare to custody solutions, not something that you compare to cold storage, multi-sig, run your own node. It doesn't compare to that. What it does is it creates a way to have small, community-led custody solutions where all of the members in that community can maintain privacy from the people offering the service, and you can have the service fault tolerant. That is a big deal. And it's also, I think, a huge way in which this will be a brilliant way to get around regulations, because none of the actual participants are custodians per se. Not any single one of them is. They are as a group, but they're not an entity. They're just sharing an address together. I think that's going to massively benefit how we can actually set these things up. And this is what, this could get us closer to that future where, you know, just like a router in your home, you know, we don't have enough IP addresses for all the devices in the world, not even close. In fact, we crossed that, you know, it's like, I don't even know how many years ago, like 15 years ago, 20 years ago or whatever, we just blasted past that. And now the number of devices versus the number of IP addresses are absolutely retarded. It doesn't even compare. It's almost comical. But how do we do it? Local networks. Local networks on top of local networks on top of the wide area network. Every IP address has 15 devices behind it, 30 devices behind it. And this is how I see Bitcoin scaling in a context of UTXOs, in a context of addresses. Shared custody. This allows us to build up trusted relationships again by having a foundation to lean on that is trustless, that is trust minimized. I've said this before on the show, but it's probably a long time since I've really talked about it specifically. I think the truly revolutionary models and the truly transformative economic relationships, the business relationships and the systems and the companies, quote unquote, which it might even be finicky to call them companies, but the things that are truly going to be transformative in how the economy works and how we relate to each other in the Bitcoin space, in a Bitcoin world, are going to be based around models of trust. This is why I think Synonym is one of the most important things here. You know, Synonym is, not to get on a completely different thing, but the idea of a web of trust, of the slash tags, of having an identity and degrees of trust with the people around you, and being able to access or filter information based on the trust that you have with the people around you. I think that's going to be as critical and as breakthrough in the idea, like that is where I think true innovation is going to happen in this space. Because it's much like, you know, just being able to write reviews on a website. Like, you know, Amazon, people don't think about this, but when Amazon was coming up, when the internet was being born and we were figuring out these tools, some of the most absolutely remarkable, groundbreaking, changed everything about how we interacted with the internet and changed everything about every single website and a model of doing something on the internet was like leaving reviews. It was like having a rating from everybody who's purchased the item. Retweeting. The like button and the share button were the things that allowed, they created the idea of virality. They created the viral movement. Something as simple as that had to be invented. It wasn't immediately obvious. And when, what these tools were they were tools of communication. They were tools of how to essentially gamify social signaling, right? They were, how do we lean on the crowd for information and things that are interesting and for the spread and the creation of content. Like one of the other great breakthroughs of the internet was letting your users create your content. Facebook doesn't make any content. Twitter doesn't make any content. We make the content for them. Wikipedia is a freaking encyclopedia. It's the greatest encyclopedia that has ever been created. It is more accurate than the centralized company encyclopedias and has been for a long time. It is better sourced and it is entirely created by just the crowd. In that context, Bitcoin, just like the internet was a system of communication, Bitcoin is a system of trust. It allows creating trusted relationships around a monetary base, that a totem that can be trusted because you can fully verify it. It is the foundation upon which we can build trusted relationships and business relationships again. Because our institutions in this day and age, our modern institutions, have utterly failed us. They have collapsed, they have abused our trust, they have corrupted it, and we are going to have to localize to find our solutions again. And that is in building our own versions of these systems. And the ability to have an on-the-fly, like spin it up in a few minutes sort of sidechain that is a custody model that allows us to create a community wallet. Like, this is the Bitcoin beach. This feels like to me what this could be. I'll make sure we caveat it that way. What this could be is a better, more aligned Bitcoin beach setup. Is the relationship between it's multi-sig made better because it's multi-sig with privacy added and a simple way to do off-chain payments, off-chain transfers of Bitcoin, and relying on a quote-unquote fault-tolerant group of guardians. And the simple fact of the matter, the simple and great benefit is that it is private. And it is a far, far better relationship than what everybody has with Coinbase. And inevitably, if we do not, and this is why I really appreciate Obi's, he refers to this as the third pillar, that this is like second party custody. I like that idea, the second party custody. That's a really good framing, I guess you can say. But really what I think this is trying to solve the centralized ease of onboarding, of using, and of just having everything work of a centralized custodial model of simply using Coinbase. How do you get that, but step that one step, two steps, three steps closer to the hold your own keys, the I am in my multisig, I am running my Lightning node, etc. How do we move the custodial relationship further in that direction? How do we obsolete the stupid, entirely dependent, the entirely not fault tolerant, centralized, one hacker can come in and take everybody's funds, Coinbase model? How do we obsolete that? Because if I think that if we don't do that, if we don't find a way to improve that, which is why I think Fediment is actually a huge, huge net positive, is that we just still end up with 80% of people entirely custodial, who never hold their own keys, and never even get a touch of it. And this is an interesting middle of the road. This is an interesting trade-off to walk us in the direction of, walk us into the direction of self-custody, of people using Bitcoin with more autonomy and more individual control, and always, always more privacy. And for all of its trade-offs, for all of its negatives, because it is a custody solution, I think any and every mechanism we can develop for better privacy on Bitcoin is a huge win. And this is also one of those things that allows the tech savvy, the ones that are most likely to run a federation, to basically run this system for a community, is that when you can plug this thing into Lightning, so that this wallet can literally just fulfill any Bitcoin, Fediment, or Lightning invoice, that it just works seamlessly between all of these. But it's also the kind of thing that would justify, that would make, you know, $50 on-chain fees to make changes to the Federation justifiable. Not a problem. And the need or the desire to get privacy and to compress those transactions by coin joining them or aggregating signatures with other federations that you work with, which actually doesn't really matter because you don't have to trust another federation if you're not accepting their IOUs. All you're doing is using them to offload your signature data by combining signatures. Well, then they become a great means of privacy, and you break on-chain analytics almost entirely. Now, obviously, that's in a perfect world where everybody is, you know, using this in combination with Lightning. And it's also one of the beautiful things about Lightning. You know, people have read a bunch of comments and like a bunch of crypto people talking about how Lightning adoption isn't as big as everybody thought it was going to be. Well, it's one of those things that Lightning is so powerful explicitly because it's a branch between, it's chain agnostic. It's like you can run it, you can connect it to Fediment, you can connect it to Liquid, you can connect it to these alternative systems, to the shadow chains, and the state chains of the setup. So as soon as, if any of these things catch on, Lightning becomes the bridge back to Bitcoin. Lightning becomes the communicator, becomes the translator from one to the other. And then when, with the fact that with Fediment, with a system like this, you can actually, it's pretty much agnostic to the code that you run on it. So I think there was another one that was mentioned here, or was this in another piece that, this was in another piece that I read, but the idea that you can run Simplicity on this. They actually did a hackathon and put Simplicity on a Fediment chain, which is a completely different scripting system that's not on Bitcoin and would require a massive amount of work and would be a huge thing to actually have this available on Bitcoin, but you can just run it on something like Fediment. So you have the optionality to have both this ability to privately transact off-chain in the Fediment that you can interact by having a Lightning connection, and you can interact with any Lightning invoice and, you know, send Bitcoin or Lightning to anybody anywhere. So the Fediment isn't locked. It's not isolated. But at the exact same time, within the Fediment, within this little quote-unquote sidechain, you can have smart contracts. You can have Simplicity. You can have a completely different scripting language. It's basically agnostic. You can essentially do whatever the hell you want in it. And ultimately, at the end of the day, you're leaning on the fact that you have a federated fault tolerance to keep the thing from failing, keep it unlikely, very unlikely to be co-opted, very unlikely to ultimately fail or to lose a critical number of keys. And it remains robust, and even the peg in and the peg out to enter and leave the Federation, all users have privacy within the entire process. So I don't know. I'm not even sure if I hit all the points that I wanted to get into, but this is interesting. This is interesting. That is probably the simplest way to put this, is I see this as a very, very exciting development that I think a lot of communities that are not thought about as customers, like in the context of the Western world and the modern world and the United States, this doesn't seem like, oh, this is like, oh, not a very interesting model. But from the context of a small village, a community in the developing world that has no institutions that it can trust, has no good banking infrastructure, and has an unbelievably corrupt government, but everybody has a freaking smartphone, this is a really big deal. This is a really big deal. And I think that is the more interesting model and the more sustainable path to long-term robust adoption. And the fact that this could help scaling in a massive way, it's really, really interesting. So with that, we'll be talking about this again, no doubt. This was just a really cool introduction. And it's really exciting to see Justin Moon and Obi and, oh God, I can't remember who else is working on this. It's really good to see that crew building something like this. This is cool. And it's also, man, to see Shalmi and eCash actually happen because we can build it on top of Bitcoin after all this time. That's just exciting. I don't know. There's something about bringing back a little bit of cypherpunk history. It's amazing how many tools and ideas were, you know, attempted to be put into place that were so promising all throughout the 90s that the cypherpunks designed on and built, but did not have an independent, trustless base to build it off of, and because of that, failed. There might still be a lot of things that the cypherpunks created that are left to unpack. Things finally to be realized 20, 30 years later because we have Bitcoin. So I'll leave it there. Thank you guys for listening. I am Guy Swan. A huge thank you to the Audionauts for supporting this show, to Swan Bitcoin, to Fold, and to CoinKite, who make this show possible and keep the lights on around here and keep Rad fed and warm. Hey, buddy. Are you getting fussy? Daddy's ranting too long. All right, guys. I am out. Thank you so much for listening. I'll catch you on the next one. And until then,
take it easy!
You have been listening to Bitcoin Audible, a 111 production.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.